Okay, ready?
Yeah, let's get started.
Hello, welcome back to the Hen House. I'm Michaela.
And I'm Emily.
And I'm a farmer.
And I'm not a farmer.
And today, we have a very special and anticipated guest, Rebecca the Vet.
That's what we're calling you.
We've been saying like, oh, we're going to get a vet on here. We're going to get a vet on here. And now
I think we've been saying that since like almost the beginning.
Yeah.
Actually, so. A funny story about calling me a vet. When someone was introducing me once, they were like, hey, this is Rebecca, a vet. And then the person thought my name was Yvette, like E-V. TT.
No, she's a veterinarian.
Yes, by trade. And her name is Rebecca. And she is a veterinarian.
Yeah. So normally I do like a little intro to our guests because I personally know them, like just through the farming community. But this is our first time that we actually don't know our guest. So I thought I would share a funny story that we have in common instead of introducing you. So I'd love to hear your side of the story of this. So we have to get our pigs castrated once the male pigs, once they are born, because we just do that. So there's no accidents that happen with
also
aborting, siblings,
but we can go into that later.
Yeah. And so one little piglet got missed, and on our end, I was like, I think that piglet didn't get castrated. And my dad and Lauren were like, there's no way, we counted them. And I was like, no, I think a pig got missed. And they went out and they were
hard
like, yep, a pig got missed. And so we called a vet and like our vet clinic, and somebody was supposed to come out and they canceled on us. And then last minute we had to catch the piglet and bring it to the vet clinic, which is not an easy feat to do because now they're much older, right? They're running out in pasture and they know you're trying to catch them. And so we spent 45 minutes trying to catch this pig. We finally caught the pig. And then we call the vet and she's like, yeah, no, I'm not here anymore. And we're like, what are we supposed to do? And so my dad called you, Rebecca, the vet, and was like, hey, we have a favor. Can you do this for us? And you were like, yeah. I mean, I guess bring it over. And you live in town. So you castrated this piglet on the side of the road, I'm guessing.
In their backyard. Yep.
And so for you, like for us, we were like, that was an amazing blessing. Like we could have never caught that pig a second time. And so it was like a really, like a good need we needed to be fulfilled. But like, do you get calls like that often? Or was that like the first time somebody was like,
were you like, what the heck?
No, definitely not the first time. But
really?
Funny.
Not your first backyard castration?
First backyard castration, but not the first call from friends.
Okay.
It just made me laugh though, your story of chasing the piglet for 45 minutes. Cause the last castration that I went to, it was, a litter of potbelly pigs.
Okay.
And they were small enough to fit under the fence as well. So the guy was literally chasing them around with a fishing net all over the yard trying to catch them. It did work if you need to catch them again.
Oh my goodness. Okay. That's a good idea.
Life hack. Fishing Write net. That down.
Yep.
Yeah. Normally they're like they're small. So we do within the first, I think, 7 days, the first 2 weeks.
Usually, yep.
And so, like, they're not running around, like, at that point.
They don't suspect anything yet.
Yeah, you're just grabbing them and, yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting, though. The neighbors were, they heard the squealing, the screaming, so Ryan had to take our dog so he wouldn't freak out in the backyard, and we have a neighbor who's a vet tech on the other corner, and she's like, what is happening over there? And Ryan's like, oh, she's just castrating a piglet.
Like every
other
Tuesday.
In the backyard?
Yeah. Classic Tuesday.
We had a piglet who was like so small, he was the runt. We call all of our runts Zacchaeus. I don't know if you've mentioned that on here because they're like so small that they have to like climb to the top. Like they have to climb all the way up on their siblings just to get food. And so like Zacchaeus in the story had to climb to the top of the tree to see Jesus.
Yeah.
And so we call all of our runts Zacchaeus. But Zacchaeus didn't get castrated with everybody else because he was so small. He couldn't handle it. Like he was substantially smaller.
Okay. Aww.
And so we had to bring him to the vet clinic afterwards. And like all the vet techs came out because they don't normally get a little piglet in the actual clinic. So they all came out to watch the castration.
Yeah, it's always interesting for people that don't really see because usually we go out to the farm.
Yes,
so
right.
Yeah, a lot of those things don't get seen.
Yeah, that was actually one of our questions, I think, was so for when you get calls from farms, you always go out to the farm,
usually,
right?
Yeah. So just because of their size, and there are some clinics that are kind of set up like Prescott, where you can drive in a horse trailer and they have stalls. Whoa. And they're actually set up for large animal surgery. But we can't do anything in clinic for large animal. We don't have the big setup for that. So usually, yeah.
Fair. I'm just cows, horses, bringing to go out. Like our largest pig, like 800-pound
Abraham, like waddling.
Yeah, good luck getting him on a trailer, too.
Honestly, he's pretty docile. He goes on trailers, but...
He was pretty good, because I have come out once before to see him, and he was, yeah, he was pretty tame. I was kind of intimidated to come and see an 800-pound boar, but he was on his best behavior.
That's good.
He was also sick, so he wasn't feeling well.
He's pretty good. He likes a lot of pats, and he lets us touch his feet. Like, he had a sore foot a while ago, and just go up to him, touch his foot, no problem.
Nice.
Oh, he's a gentle giant.
Yeah, that's good, though. Because he weighs a lot.
Yeah. He could seriously hurt you if you...
But we get people bringing... sometimes lambs will come in because they're small. Or goat kids. Chickens, actually, people bring
really
a lot of chickens into the clinic. And I'm the only one at our clinic that will see chickens. Everyone else was like, nope, I draw the line. So I have become the chicken vet.
How many chickens have you seen in the clinic?
Since COVID, what do you do with them? It has become really popular just the last 2-3 years with COVID. Everyone got backyard chickens for something to do. A lot of what we see is respiratory illness in chickens. Yeah, especially in the winter when they're all in the coop together.
Yeah.
So yeah, they get a lot of respiratory issues. What else do we see? Sometimes chickens can get egg bound where they haven't laid an egg for a while.
So they're like constipated?
Yeah, kind of like constipated. Yeah, it's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's some that have just leg injuries or issues. Bumblefoot is a chicken issue. But unfortunately, a lot of chickens, by the time I see them, they're pretty far gone. So I end up euthanizing a lot of them just to,
When we have chicken problems, like we have other friends who have chickens, and usually the answer is if they die... Like, if a chicken's going to live, it's going to live. And if it's going to die, it'll just die.
Yes.
So, like, if it gets bumblefoot, it's like, we just segregate it and it's probably...
Yeah. In a practical farm setting, it's not really worth bringing a chicken to the vet. But a lot of people, since COVID, too, they're more pets. than production animals. So we have had chickens that actually, like, sleep in bed with people.
What?
They are their pets. And they wear a diaper in the house.
Oh, that is crazy.
I think that would be pretty cute, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't pick up, like...
Well, you don't like birds.
Our chickens.
Michaela hates birds. Like, she doesn't like them.
Chickens.
A lot of people have just, kind of a phobia. Like, a lot of the texts when chickens come in.
I'll look at them. Like, if the boys pick them up, I'll, like... look through their feathers for mites and stuff, but I don't personally like picking them up. So I can't imagine sleeping with a chicken.
It's like you're in your deepest, darkest fears.
They just like peck at you at night. Ooh,
that'd be so bad. Okay, so now that we've kind of talked like funny stories, Rebecca, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Oh yeah, we totally forgot.
I was like, I feel like this is going so well, but I feel like we should get to know
the introduction.
So we know your name, and we know that you have a great sense of humor, and that you're a vet. And that you're the chicken doctor. But like, okay, tell us a little bit about yourself, like family, where you live, or not specifically where you live, but like, are you
know where I live now?
Yeah. Well, we need the full address, your phone,
for future castration.
Your SIN number. Yeah, but just kind of tell us a little bit about yourself. How'd you get into this kind of field? Like,
so I went to school in Guelph. It's kind of the only vet school around, so not surprising. I grew up in Oshawa. So GTA, but my parents are from the Smith Falls area originally. Oh. So we'd come visit our grandparents a lot growing up. Nice. And my grandparents had a dairy farm too. So I definitely had a lot of animal interest just from that exposure.
Right.
Just pets growing up. So as long as I can remember, I'm kind of that stereotypical girl who's always wanted to be a vet. As long as they can remember.
And you did it though.
And yes, followed through. So I moved back here just for work. And then I ended up meeting my now husband at the church that your parents go to, Michaela's parents. We live in town right now. And I mostly work at the Smith Falls Clinic, sometimes Merrickville and Athens as well. They're kind of co-owned, but yeah, that's it in a nutshell. I'm currently on mat leave because we just had our baby in December.
Oh, nice. Congratulations.
So I haven't been working for the last almost 9 months, but
just doing friend calls.
Just backyard calls.
It's on the side hustle. Castrations. Yeah. That's actually a good question, unless you have something else to say.
No,
that's okay. Yeah. Do you like mechanics, for example, they have tools that are their tools, and like they bring them to whatever mechanic shop they go to, typically, I would assume. I'm looking at Span for confirmation.
He says yes.
Is like veterinary that way as well? Like, do you have your own tools that you get to bring home on Matley?
Not for this year, no. It was kind of interesting, actually, when you asked me if I could castrate the piglet. I was like, oh shoot, I don't have my work truck with me because it's a company vehicle.
Oh, okay.
So, but I did happen to just save a couple things in the house in case we had case like a calving or something. For just this reason, I saved a scalpel.
Thank goodness.
And just had it in the laundry room.
As one does.
So, just normal tools in a vet's house. Yeah, so I don't have most of my things with me. Usually only large animal vets have like an on-call or on-the-road vehicle, small animal stuff stays in the clinic for the most part. So I just happen to have some leftover things.
That's probably for the best.
Maybe just like a definition question for everybody. What is considered a large animal like vet and a small animal vet? I think last week we were talking about like small game versus and I was like, does it come up under your knee? Like, is it like a height thing? Is it a weight thing? Is it like,
not anyways, if you could, it's probably better divided as farm animal versus pets. But then there's, I guess horses don't really fit that category as well either. So large, it definitely is a size thing, but then there's chickens, which aren't, they're not necessarily large, but they're considered, a large farm animal.
And so when you like choose your profession and you choose, like, are you like a large and small animal vet, or do you like go into one field or the other? Like, do you pick that while you're in school? Do you pick that later in life? Like, or is it like interchangeable? Like, I don't know.
it's definitely, it starts kind of in school. So it's almost like you have a major in vet school. Not until your final year. So vet school's 4 years.
Okay.
The first 3 years are kind of general. Everyone has to learn the same basic things to get the background together. Mm-hmm. And then in your fourth year is when you do your clinical placement. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of pick and choose and cater towards your interests.
Right.
Most clinics in this area are mixed animal or small. We don't have kind of the same large scale farms to have large animal only clinics. There's just not enough clients for that.
No,
but if you went Guelph, Way, or Western,
you would have
Ontario,
like a full.
Yeah, there's plenty of clinics that just do. There's even clinics that just do dairy cows.
Really?
There's so many farms.
Interesting.
Yeah,
we've had people say like, well, do you not, like, some of our mentors are from Southern Ontario or maybe more Northern Quebec, and they all have specific swine. Veterinary, like, they each have their own for pigs, and it's like they're like, oh, why don't you just get your pig vet to come? And we're like, well,
we don't have that luxury. That is interesting. I have done some shadowing of swine vets too, and that's all they do is just pigs. So but you do have to be careful with commercial pigs because they're so biosecure, so they get diseases very easily. You actually have to shower in and shower out, even as the vet. So pig vets, they can only see like a certain number of clients a day, and if one barn has a disease, they might have to isolate before going to other barns.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
that's like a pretty outbreak, and you gotta do it. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, they have their own specialty.
So that's, you're not crazy. Like, you're not envious of that. You're like, no thanks.
It wasn't, I enjoyed it, but it wasn't definitely my line of work that I'd want to go into.
No, that's right. So if you could pick, like, do you prefer large animal or do you prefer small animal?
I kind of like both now. When I was in school, my last year, I did major in large animal because I thought that's all I wanted to do. Mm. I always liked working with farm animals. I didn't think I wanted to do like a ton of small dogs and cats. I hated dentistry in school. We just cover it kind of the bare minimum of dentistry. Yeah. And I kind of found out that I loved it once I started doing it. So I do enjoy doing both now, but
We don't have to take our dog to get a tooth pulled, so.
Oh, no.
You won't be there because you're on mat leave, but yep. Some other vet will pull his tooth.
Unless you go to the backyard.
Yep.
I don't know. I think they're going to have
to. That might be traumatic.
Do they have to put dogs under anesthesia to pull teeth? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's not like people where you can't just say, hold still and we'll put a freezing needle in. Yes. Yeah. Some dogs you can. There are very few places that will do dogs just scale polish without anesthesia, but it depends on the dog too.
Right.
But yeah, here we have to put everything under for anything
No, that's fair. Well, is that Cash?
No, it's Goosebeetle because he's a puppy, so all of his adult teeth are coming in, and one of the baby teeth just didn't
come out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So not a huge deal. Just
poor little buddy.
Aw, he's not in pain or anything. So
how old is he now?
6 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think almost 7 months. I don't know. It's about that time where the teeth, if they're not falling out now, they're probably not going to fall out, I guess.
Yeah, they probably should be out by now. Some of them are late, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I did have kind of one more question just like about you.
Sure.
So when you're not doing vet work, what are you doing? Like, when do you have any other hobbies? Yeah. Like, what else kind of do you do? Or is like animals your soul thing?
Definitely not the soul thing. We do have pets at home.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I do have hobbies that are kind of on a back burner this year. That's being on fair. Mat leave.
It's,
you
have a child.
Full-time job with a baby now.
Yeah.
I still like going for walks or hikes, so that can multitask and bring along the baby. I like kayaking too. I was just out for a kayak today, actually.
Oh, cool. And that was a beautiful day.
Yeah, it was perfect for it. Colors are starting to change. Reading and once in a while painting too, if I have time. I like painting.
And we said this about courtesy, is well-rounded too, but
yes.
So are you.
So are you. I guess we'll kind of now that we know you a little bit better, I guess we'll kind of get into like the meat of the meat.
Yes.
Kind of like what we're going to be talking about. I know we have some kind of like bigger questions that have smaller questions attached to them. Just about specific things that you do. Do you want to start? Do you want to read a question first?
Ask away.
Sure. I can start. It's up to you.
I'm looking at my notes because now I've forgotten. I have so many questions that are like
the rabbit trail
that are like our farm specific. Like, do you want me to, that are not on the sheet?
Sure, go for it.
Yeah, might as well. We're at your farm. So.
Well, so about pigs specifically, because they are like chickens, like we discussed, are just kind of chickens.
They're there.
But the pigs are obviously the ones that we have the most like vet calls with. Mm-hmm. And so we've seen kind of two things, but like shipping fever being one of our pigs had a miscarriage, and then we've had some allergies to actual medication, but those are the only things we've really seen.
Right.
But you said like swine in like controlled environments are different. So is that just because of the breed, or like is it because of the environment they're in?
I think it's a bit of both. So they've been kind of so fine-tuned and bred for a specific purpose that they're probably more hybridized than an average farm pig that's just kind of not exposed to a lot of different things. So they're also really high scale, so there's a lot of them in a smaller place.
Right.
Not that they don't necessarily have enough space, but they're more prone to respiratory things anytime you have higher density of animals in a confined space. And just vets seeing so many different pigs on a given day too, they can transfer things very easily.
Right.
Yeah. There's a big, like, I don't know, like in the farming community, I don't know about the veterinary community. There's like almost like this, I don't know what other word to use, but like stigma around like swine farming. Whereas like it's just not like the norm in this area. And I don't know if that's because they've had bad diseases or they can get out and they're not, like, I don't really know why, but even in our experience, there's not a lot of vets who do swine in this area specifically. They're just like, well, I don't know.
Yeah, it's they are kind of a specialty because we don't learn a ton about them in school unless you take the actual swine placement in your fourth year.
Okay.
So I did take that placement, but that's, other than that, you only get a couple lectures here and there on pigs.
Okay.
So if you're going to go into pigs, you kind of have to really shadow a lot of pig vets. So yeah, the average mixed animal vet doesn't have a ton of knowledge.
Okay.
Now that potbelly pigs are becoming more popular, there's a lot more lectures for our continuing education that are offered around them.
Pigs.
Yeah, some of those fancier breeds too. So we are starting to learn more about them, and because they're bringing them into the clinic a lot more too for even potbelly pigs, spays, and neuters, that's becoming a thing.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, we're kind of by necessity having to learn more about pigs. But yeah, I don't know if it's just kind of this area is not a hot spot for growing pigs on a commercial scale, but Western Ontario, there's a lot more pig barns. I think the Mennonite communities, they do a lot of pig farming as well.
They do. We sell 30 of our pigs each year to a Mennonite community in Northern Quebec.
Okay.
And so Philippe comes down and takes 30, whatever pigs we have, however many pigs we have, and brings them back up. And yeah, so like that's the only other person. But
yeah, they do a good job of raising pigs. Yeah. And yeah, similar to how you guys have your setup here. It's, I like to see.
Like a lot. Yeah, that's what the vet says when they come here. They're like, oh, your pigs have so much space and they have a good place to be. And
they have outdoor access. Which comes with its challenges too, but.
For sure. Yep. And then the other question I had before we can, Emily can start asking.
No, it's okay. I like these.
Was you said about, we were talking about the pig castration and we were like, oh, I can't remember now. But you said, oh, we can get into that later. Do you remember what it was?
Oh, you said a word. Boar taint.
Yeah, that word.
What is that?
Yeah, so it's actually the testosterone affects the taste of the meat.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh. So if they're not castrated by a certain age and then they start to become mature, then it actually taints the meat and it has like a very off taste to it. Oh, some people don't mind the taste, but selling in the average grocery store, people wouldn't like that. Like the taste.
Do they say that we have to just put it to ground? That's what people say. Like if Abraham ever got something that was like, we had to put him down and it was still usable meat, like they're like, you just have to put him to ground.
Wouldn't be able to sell it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that mean
you could
ground meat? What do you mean put it to ground?
Like ground pork. Yeah. Okay. And like we couldn't sell it. We would have to eat it ourselves. And then we have, like, you know, 600 pounds of ground pork.
Yeah, that would be a lot.
Yeah. A lot of meatballs.
We'd buy some from you.
Yeah.
Just under the table.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of that. It's just like, so. Yeah. And then I think I had one other question, but I can't remember. I'm sure it'll come up.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of had one about like specifically your work schedule. So do you work like a Monday to class? Okay. So I know you're on maternity leave, but like, pre that.
Yeah.
Did you work like Monday to Friday and then were on call in the evenings or every other weekend? Like how did that
Stefan
dropped his phone. How does that kind of like, can you kind of walk us through like your schedule like as a vet? Like I'm just curious how that is.
Yeah. So for our practice being mixed animal, and it's gonna look different at every different clinic. If you just do small animal, you don't I don't know of any clinics that do on call for just small animals. So for our practice, mixed animal, we're actually one of the few remaining that still offers small animal after hours emergency, like on call as well as large. Otherwise, you'd have to go into a 24-hour clinic in the city somewhere, Ottawa or Kingston.
Right.
An average week, a lot of clinics are going towards a 4-day week, but I was still on a 5-day week. So 8:30 to 5, roughly, an hour lunch. And then one week night I was on call. So from 5 until 8:30 the next morning.
Okay. So a full
on call. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Full overnight. And then one full weekend every month.
Okay.
Yeah. And it depends on how many vets you have at the clinic. So if you only have two vets, you're on kind of every other weekend.
Right.
But if you have, we have a good rotation of people.
Nice.
So it was just, a one weekend a month.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite shift?
It's kind of nice to not be on call.
No, that's fair. Yeah, like waiting by the phone.
Yeah. So, but it also has kind of an element of excitement too to be on call. It's it does suck to go out in the middle of the night, but then it's kind of has its own different rewarding kind of feel because you're the only one. You did it by yourself, and
That was one of our questions. I think too is like, what is it like to be? Because we've only been on like that call. Of like the emergency call, right? Like, oh no, something went south. Like I think one time we had a pig with pneumonia and she went south really quick, like in the evening.
Yeah.
And we've been on that receiving, like we need somebody, you know? And so what is it like to be on like the receiving call, not the call.
Yes, the getting the call end. It has, the longer I've been out, it's gotten a bit easier, but it's it's kind of a level of anxiety to be on call.
Like an adrenaline rush too.
Yeah. I don't have trouble sleeping, thankfully, but I know there's colleagues and other people that literally can't eat or can't sleep when they're on call because it's just so, you're just so tense waiting for the call. You can't start doing anything. You're kind of housebound the whole time because you're afraid to go too far.
Yeah,
but I've gotten kind of less uptight on call just as I've gotten used to it.
Right.
Yeah.
And you kind of learn little tricks here and there. Like it's okay to let it go to voicemail just to, if you're in the middle of something, and then listen to it and kind of get your bearings and call them back.
Yeah.
And it depends on the type of call too. Mm-hmm. So I found that as well. If I pick up the phone and I know right away it's a farmer and it's a large animal call, you know for sure you're going out because they don't call unless you absolutely need someone to come out. It's a legitimate emergency. Mm-hmm. But if it's a small animal call, depending on what it is, sometimes it's a bit of a relief because it's like, oh, I can just kind of talk them off the ledge over the phone with this. Or maybe it's not a that evening emergency. They can come in the next morning.
Right.
Can just talk them through things. Or sometimes they can treat the animal at home too if they have something at home, if they have leftover pain medication from the last time they were in, I can give them a dose. Or if their dog has eaten something, I can tell them how to induce vomiting at home and save them a trip. Yeah. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
That is. So what's kind of like going through your head while you're driving to this like emergency call? Yeah. Like, are you like planning your game plan? Like, do you kind of know, like if the farmer calls you and is like, my cow's throwing up or something, I don't know. And then are you like, okay, I'm on my way. Are you now like thinking about all the possible combinations of like, what could this be? Or are you like listening to your music? Like, I'll see what I do when I get there. Like,
yeah, what's it kind of like? Like, most of the time I am kind of giving myself like a pep talk or planning what I'm going to do when I get there. Trying to do drug dose calculations on my phone as I'm driving so I have things ready. And if it's something I've done multiple times, then I don't necessarily need to be as stressed about it on the way. Or not that everything's the same every time, but if it's something that I haven't done on my own before, I may have seen it done or done it with a colleague before or just done it during daylight instead of midnight, then it's a little bit more stressful. And or I might be, sometimes when I first started, I'd have to call my boss or a colleague and just say, hey, this is what I'm planning on doing. Does this sound like something you would do? Just kind of reassure yourself when you're first starting out.
No, that's fair.
Yeah.
Because I was always thinking about like what's going through your brain.
Honestly, because with like what's going through our brain, I don't know.
Like worst case scenario, all
we've
these
never had like a situation, like I think the pneumonia was like the only life or death thing we've ever had to deal with. I can imagine though, there's farmers who call you and it literally is like she probably could have made it for a couple like hours.
Sometimes you just don't know though.
Yeah,
you
just have no idea.
Take the chance. Yeah.
But like, I'm sure some farmers call and it's like, you need to get here now or they're going to die. Like,
yeah. And I have thankfully not a lot of times, but occasionally I get two emergencies at the same time serious emergencies. I had a horse colic and a calving call at the exact same time.
Oh no.
So I'm like, well, both of these could potentially die if I push them. But that doesn't happen a lot. So,
so in that case, like, how do you triage that?
Yeah, it's tricky. And I did call for backup once because I didn't think that I could make either one wait. Yeah. So, but sometimes you can kind of see how serious the colic is. Just get to know more of the details over the phone.
What is colic?
Colic is basically pain in the horse's abdomen. So it could be from gas or it could be a twisted intestine. It could be anything that causes pain, but it can be really serious and they can need surgery or they might just need a dose of pain med and walk it off. So
do you, if they need surgery, like let's say you go to a call like that and your assessment is, okay, well, this animal needs surgery. Like, do you perform surgery at the farm?
Or? No, not for horses. So yeah, they need a really sterile environment for something like that. So they would actually have to trailer them in to a large animal surgery place, which isn't always possible for some people. Right. So sometimes it is a really bad news kind of death sentence for some horses.
Yeah.
That's have you had to give that news to somebody before?
Unfortunately,
It doesn't get easier.
No, it's horse euthanasias are definitely tricky, especially after you've tried treatment too.
Right. Yeah.
You've done a young horse too, and you just,
it's and I think the differences sometimes between horses, like maybe you can speak to this, but like they ride that line really well of like pet and like livestock, so to speak. It's just like nobody has horses, obviously, for meat. Like they're not farm animals. Mm-hmm.
They're sense. Definitely like, pets.
Sometimes they work, but they're not. Like they're still pets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a huge emotional attachment for horses.
Yeah. That's really tough. Whereas like our pigs, like our breeder pigs, sure, we have an emotional attachment to, but like we grow our pigs for meat. So it's like, it's just a different attachment.
Yeah. Like you have a different mindset when you're going into things. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know, horses can be really tough.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite procedure or do you even like doing any procedures, or do you like the just the little nice checkups or like?
No, it's those are always nice too if you have a really busy day to just have a relaxing vaccine appointment. But I do enjoy surgery, so most of our surgery is just routine, so spaying, neutering dogs and cats. Mm-hmm. But then we will sometimes have something exciting like a C-section or a leg amputation or a mass removal, a big growth on a dog or something.
I like how you called those exciting.
they can be stressful too if it's a huge procedure too that needs some research. But
so is surgery like a special thing you have to take in vet school, or can, like for example with humans it's like surgeons are specialized, but in veterinary clinics is it like kind of everybody
for
does
the
it?
Average surgery, so we are all trained in spays and neuters in school. So everyone leaves school having spayed and neutered cats and dogs. So that's kind of like your basic skill. And then if you specialized in large animal in school, you hopefully will have done a couple cow surgeries or C-section or twisted stomach or something like that. But anything else is you either learn from your colleagues or it's a specialty that you refer to a bigger hospital. Mm. Yeah.
So you kind of learn it on the job. It's not like a schooling thing.
Yeah. Something like an amputation or a C-section. Unless you saw it on a placement, they don't teach that the actual skills, the hands-on in school. You might learn the theory behind it, but don't get to practice it until you're on the job.
So you have to shadow somebody. You'd have to shadow somebody before you amputate it. Or would they, if you were the only veterinary, like if you were the only vet there, would they be like, well, you have to do it? Like
In some cases, it depends too on the person. Like some people are not confident in surgery or it's not their favorite thing. So they wouldn't attempt something by themselves. But thankfully in our clinic, we do usually have at least one other vet in the building that could scrub in and help you if you needed it. Right. But surgery that I've never done before, I'll watch a lot of videos on it, or I'll scrub in and do it with someone before and I'll have someone usually do it with me if it's something that's really big.
So can you perform any surgery on the farm? Like on a call?
Most things, yes.
Really?
It depends on the animal and it depends on, there's some things you would refer to a large animal surgeon. So anything horse surgery, unless it's repairing a big laceration or something, stitching something you can do on farm. But any major surgery for horses, you would send into a clinic somewhere.
Okay.
But cows, you pretty much do what you can on farm.
Yeah.
And you're not going to do serious things like amputations for cows usually because they're a production animal, but a C-section or a twisted stomach, those are really common surgeries to do just on the farm.
And would castration be classified as a surgery? Like would you, cause you have to use a scalpel?
Depends on, there's a couple different ways to castrate too. So
we can talk
about it. Technically a surgery.
Let's talk about it. Cause I want to know. I'm interested too. Graphic warning.
Yes. Audiographic.
Yeah. Skip like, I don't know, 60 seconds down the road if you don't want to hear it.
So, horses are definitely, I would consider them a surgery for their castration because we knock them out. So they're under anesthetic.
Okay.
We do castrations for horses on farm too.
Okay.
And so you give them a sedative and they're laying down for the procedure and it's with a scalpel and you actually do open everything to remove them.
Okay.
For cows, there's a couple different ways, and sheep, you can actually crush the spermatic cord externally. Oh. Yeah, not pleasant sounding, but
well, like no, I've seen it in practice, right? Like the best way that like mm-hmm. the farmers will describe it is just like you elastic band it. That's what they say.
Yes, that's like, another way too. Yeah, oh, okay. So you can you have to do when they're babies, so yes. when they're quite young, yeah. Or else it's just not effective. It's right. not powerful enough to, right. to cut off blood supply once they get to a certain size.
Wow. Okay, so yeah. I can't help but kind of smile. Like it's kind of like I'm giggling. Like it's so
like the way you said. You're like crush the spermatic cord.
Wait, so that's two different things, right?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so two different ones. So there's elastic banding that has okay. to be done on very young males, and that will just cut off blood supply mm-hmm. Over a week or 2 weeks, and eventually it will just die and fall off.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Is that painful for them, or is it like
it's not a sharp pain. It's not like they would have to be under anesthetic to do okay. it, but it does cause a constant irritation. It's like your leg is falling asleep, like that tingling oh, constantly. Right.
That would drive me bananas yeah, until for a whole week.
So it is irritating, but it for a large scale when you have hundreds to do, yeah. mm-hmm. it's just not affordable for farmers or practical yeah. to, you know, put them all under anesthesia, surgically right. remove them when they're older. Yeah, so that's kind of the most common okay. way to do a lot of them at once.
So interesting.
Yeah. And then there is the crushing technique. So there's right. a clamp that you can externally just crush the cord, and then it will cut off blood supply to the testicles and make them infertile.
Wow.
Okay.
So yeah, it doesn't actually fall off, but it's, yeah, they're there, but they don't work.
So okay. wait, how long do you have to keep the clamp on there for?
It's just like a same day procedure. So probably oh, okay, okay. maybe 2 minutes. You just keep it clamped. Yeah.
And really? And then it's,
yeah, it's not yeah. foolproof though. Sometimes, like sometimes the blood flow, yes, it will right. reattach itself. Yeah,
okay.
yeah,
that's crazy.
The pig's like, I'm gonna do it.
Yes. Well, there's been some accidents that way.
So that's for cows.
Cows, you can do it that way that as well. Yeah, cows, and for sheep, pigs? Pigs, you can't just because of their anatomy. So their right. scrotum is very close to their body; it doesn't hang.
Yeah.
Whereas, oh, okay. yeah, cows and sheep. It's, yeah. yeah, it's more pendulous.
Yeah, because like we've only had.
I like that terminology.
We've only been able like to castrate one way. Is that for pigs? Is just the only way? Like when they're
pretty much
7
yeah.
days old.
Yep, you do have to actually yeah open them surgically.
So we had probably one of your colleagues, I don't know her name, so I couldn't even mention it if I knew, but she, cause Lauren said, I want to learn how to castrate our pigs ourselves.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, sure, I'll teach you how to do it. You just have to do the first one with your teeth.
I've seen videos of that.
So really?
It is a thing that yes. yeah, the old school farmers would do just because yeah. it was faster.
Like yep. you like pull the elastic and then
no, so like
oh, you
the
bite.
Actual testicle. Yeah, yeah. So you would surgically open it with the scalpel and yeah. then they would grab them with their teeth and rip it out.
Yeah.
Stop, you're joking. You're, no, you're pranking it's serious. Me right now.
No.
Yeah.
It's probably on YouTube.
And so yeah. I'll have to look that up later. If you're feeling like you have a good stomach, you can look it up. But our pig mentor, Elwood, which we've talked about on the podcast, literally said the same thing to Lauren. It was like, yeah, you have to just like, he's like, you just have to do it with your teeth. And he's like 85 years old. So he's been doing this for a long time. And Lauren thought he was joking until the vet came and said the same thing. And then, yeah, but Elwood does things goodness. Crazy. Like he's just been in it for so long. So he has things that crazy. He tells us to do. And like, you know, they're going to work because he's done it like.
Mm-hmm.
Probably 500 years. Times.
Yeah, that's the thing with old school vets. Yeah, yeah, it's not the new fandangled no. way of doing sorry. It, but it works.
Elwood is not a vet. He's just a pig farmer who's right. been doing
or
it.
Or old school farmers. Yeah. yeah, they have their.
Because he
ways.
Doesn't have vet, like, you know, his suggestions yeah. are like, so we have to cut the tusks off mm-hmm. of our boar, right? So they get long and they get sharp and they can hurt you
mm-hmm.
if, or the females, if he starts like thrashing or something.
Yeah.
And so. The vets were like, yeah, we'll just put them under anesthesia and then we'll, you know, we'll take like a tool mm-hmm. to cut them off. And Elwood was like, don't ever do that. Just give your, this again, not medical advice, just from Elwood, 85 years old, said, just give him a Mickey of vodka in his water.
That actually has some stock to
okay.
it. Yeah. I have given pigs beer before to help sedate them.
Yeah. And he's like, you just need to like give them some time and then go in with an angle grinder and cut their And he said, like, he said, but just make sure they're good and drunk before you go in, because pigs are never happy drunks. Mm. So he said they're always angry. So you have to make sure he's in a stupor before you go in.
Yeah, that is true. They do kind of get in a rage after alcohol.
So you get, actually, it actually has medical merit.
Yeah. Well, okay. It's, we didn't learn it in school, but no. Just kind of from other vets or lectures here and there. It didn't work as well as I thought it would. So and maybe I didn't give them enough either. So usually they say one dark beer per 100 pounds of pig.
Okay.
As a sedative plus an extra.
It's like just the Mickey of vodka.
Yeah. But I guess depends on the pig too. Just like people, maybe some like more, take less.
He said that he's never lost a pig, a drunk pig, but he has lost a pig to anesthesia. So that's what
they are very tricky to sedate because they have such a thick layer of fat that you need a really long needle to get to the muscle layer. So it's very easy to overdose them. Plus they tolerate the drugs really well too. So
interesting.
If you give them a dose and they're not sedate, the temptation is to top them up with a second dose because you need to get the procedure done. You don't have all day. Sometimes it just went into their fat layer and it takes a long time to absorb, or sometimes they just were tolerating it and then it hits them later and they can overdose sometimes. So it is tricky to sedate them.
So how do you, like you said, one dark beer per what, 100 pounds, but how do you actually weigh the animal? Like, do you literally just guess?
Yeah, usually it is kind of an educated guess. So you kind of eyeball them. We actually, when I was in school, we went to the sale barn for cows and we would kind of guess the weight of the cow before they crossed over the scale just for practice to see. Oh, looks like maybe a 1,200 pound.
That's You'd be crazy. Good at one of those fair games, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like no veterinarians allowed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to do though. So
yeah.
The best rule of thumb, depending on the drug too, is to overestimate their weight. So you don't, for something like a dewormer, you don't want to underdose them and then not deworm them effectively.
Yeah. Right.
Or for antibiotics, you don't want to underdose them and not treat the infection. So always just kind of err above what you think it is if you're not entirely sure.
Huh. That's crazy. Yeah, because we say 800 pounds. We have no idea. Like, we've never weighed him.
Yeah, or you kind of get your idea from what you've sent and has been weighed at the slaughterhouse or something like that.
Or Elwood will come and be like, that pig is, and you're like, okay.
Elwood's wisdom.
Yeah. So yeah, he cut Abraham's, like, do you call them tusks?
Yes, I believe for boars, they're called tusks.
Tusks, okay, yeah, he cut them for us so we didn't have to sedate him and stuff, yeah.
I would actually have to look that up because I've never taken tusks off a boar. Okay. I don't know how far along the blood supply goes to the horn because with cattle, there is a blood supply.
Okay.
With goats, the last kind of like 2/3 of their horn doesn't have blood supply, so there's no feeling. You can just lob them off and they don't feel anything. Yeah. So I actually don't know for boars if they have any nerve endings or blood supply.
I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, we will have to look that up.
Yeah.
Okay, we talked about, you mentioned that pigs are angry drunks. Have you ever been in a situation, if you don't mind sharing, where you've been like a little nervous because the animal was getting like a little aggressive towards you? Like, does that ever happen? I don't know.
It's definitely a hazard of the job for a large animal. So you do have to be extra cautious because they're just unpredictable. Even horses that are trained, like, you never know when they're going to kick or and they also hate vets in general because we have that smell and usually we're sticking them with a needle, so they just have ingrained hatred for vets. So
you're like, I promise I'm nice.
Yes, I promise. But I might have to hurt you a little bit.
But it's for your own good.
Yes, and you can't explain that to them either.
No.
So,
it's kind of like pediatricians, I guess, where they can't explain to the babies, like, oh, I'm sorry, I have to give you a needle.
Yeah.
But I have been kicked a few times.
We don't record these. Obviously, there's no cameras up, but for the people who are listening, Rekha's not a large woman. Like, you're quite petite.
Are you like five?
It is a disadvantage. Yeah, four? That too. Around 5'2" or 5'3". Yeah.
My height guessing's not good. I couldn't work at a fair.
So, like, when you have to go in and deal with, like, Abraham, like you said, it's intimidating.
It is intimidating. And there's also kind of a lot of more farmers now are less judgmental, but old school farmers too are quite stereotypical.
Yeah, I'm more than capable, sir.
Yeah, but I mean, even a full grown man is not going to tackle an 800-pound boar. No. So there is advantage to being bigger and stronger and having longer arms to reach things better. But right. Yeah, even like a strong man is no match for even like a cow that doesn't even weigh that much. Like if they want to get through you, they're getting through you. Yeah. So.
Even our piglets. Yeah. Like at 50 pounds, coming at strong. You. Like if you think, pick up a piglet who's 50 pounds, if you think 50 pounds is and nothing. Screaming. Like I'm sure my brothers-in-laws are like 50 pounds is nothing. I'll curl that in the gym. But then they're like yelling at you and their muscles are tensing. Yes. And you're like,
yes.
It's not easy to do.
It is not easy. No. Yeah, there's definitely, you do have to always take that extra second to look around your surroundings and make a plan and say, okay, how am I going to do this safely? Mm. And should I do this? It's not worth my life or my health just for the sake of one cow.
Yeah.
And if it's not going to happen safely, it just doesn't get done. Or we try again the next time with sedation. Yeah.
And have you had to do that before?
Yeah, there have been some situations, even horses that we can't even do basic vaccines because they're so worked up that we have to reschedule. They need to take a sedative beforehand. And if it depends on the facilities too, if people don't have like a cattle chute, it makes it a rodeo to try and do anything. And it's just sometimes it's not safe. Yeah, it doesn't matter how big you are. So
and like for small farms too, it's like you just don't have that setup. Mm-hmm. So like it's so difficult sometimes. It's like, okay, the vet has to come and we have to give this a large pig a needle.
Mm-hmm.
Like we've been in situations where we're trying to give a pig who doesn't want a needle, and it's like
sometimes it can be scary. Just impossible.
Yeah, it's just impossible. And so like, yeah, do people, the farmers in particular, do they like think about that? Like I know we've thought about that, like, okay, the vet's coming to do castrations, how are we going to make them like their job easiest? So we normally go in, we catch the pigs, so like it's not your
we're
job.
Very grateful for people like you that make our jobs easier. And I think most people do try, or most people that have had experience anyways with animals, they do try and get things ready before, or have the animals in the barn or caught. But then there's some that aren't ready, or she's in the back pasture, let's just go get her. And then, well, we're charging by the 10 minutes here. Yeah. So.
You're running around trying to catch a pig with a fishing net, and you're like, I could stay here all day, but.
Yeah. And I think it's hard too when you're on a small scale too, which is, we deal with mostly small scale farms or hobby farms, and you just don't have the finances to buy a huge cattle chute all the time, or you don't have the setup, or you have an old rundown barn that you've just inherited and you don't have stalls. Yeah,
we have. It's just like we try our best, and sometimes we try to make a chute out of something, but the pigs are so big that a homemade chute doesn't really work. And I don't know if it was a friend or maybe a vet who came to give needles, is like, there you can buy like a something that basically you can like push the whatever medication out at the same time the needle goes in. It's basically like it looks like brass knuckles, except it's just plastic on with like
It's probably similar to, we have large dosing guns, so you
that's
attach,
exactly what it is.
Yeah, the entire bottle of medication goes on, and it's like a plunger, so you can do multiple without having to redraw every dose into a syringe.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine trying to do that with, you know, you're hurting up?
That was honestly a lifesaver, because we would try to be like pushing the syringe, and like once you get it in, the pig's running, and then you can't get it in. And by we, I mean Lauren, my husband, he did this. But yeah, like once he
and
had
their
that
skin's thick too with pigs, there's like one sweet
we've
spot
bent
where you
so
can
many
get
needles.
Yes, the boar, when I was trying to inject him with like a flyby as he was running by, the needle just bounced off him and bent.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Yep. So I think we had that after you had come, because honestly it's been a lifesaver, like it, but we haven't thankfully had to give a lot of needles, but
that's good. I'm just thinking about this. Have you ever worked, like, what's the craziest animal you've had to do something, or like what's the craziest procedure you've ever had to do on and on the craziest animal? Like, I know you said chickens was like
we see a lot of chickens, so
get them unconstipated.
By the time we see them, they're kind of too far gone to do a lot, so I haven't actually done a lot of the interesting stuff on chickens. Okay. Trying to think. C-sections are interesting, okay, but they're not like all uncommon. Animals? Right. Yeah, and they're kind of a lot of work too, especially if you're short-handed, trying to hand off puppies to one person.
Oh, my gosh.
Or even a cow, like they're actually quite heavy to get a cow out of a cow. I did an interesting one on a dog. I had to do a facelift on a wrinkle dog because they had so many wrinkles. It was actually blinding the dog. So the forehead was shoving the eyelids down. Oh. It actually couldn't see. So we had to take a huge strip off the forehead. A wrinklectomy, I called it.
What kind of dog was it?
A Shar Pei. So wrinkle dogs that have all the folds, the skin folds.
Oh my goodness. So that's by far like the strangest thing.
Yeah, that's been a one-off surgery so
you're
far.
Like I've done cosmetic surgery on a dog before.
I think there's always kind of interesting injuries and lacerations to stitch up, and you're like, how on earth did you even do this to yourself for some large animals and horses?
Have you ever worked with like a strange animal?
There are some, I'm trying to think, there's alpacas and llamas that we work with, a rescue kind of sanctuary, a farm in Kempville. So they had a wild turkey there, and alpacas, ducks, kind of everything, a mix of everything. So
that's crazy.
That's so interesting. I like that. This is kind of like maybe a little bit of a deeper question, but on the podcast, we've talked about like the good times and the bad times, of like farming and like what Lorna Michaela and Uncle Mark and Aunt Salome have had to go through. Have you kind of experienced like some good and bad times in veterinary work?
And I think like most of what we talked about too, like even with Kelly, when another farmer was on here, just like with these passions and like more like out there professions, there has to be something that like keeps you going, because like there is a lot of bad times, right? So like
I think
good times isn't usually enough. So like what is that one thing?
Right, it's definitely the last 3 years since COVID definitely was a strain on everyone, not just vet clinics, but I know that was very hard on everyone's mental health, and we had to change the way we practiced too with curbside. Made everything that much more challenging. It's definitely a profession of high highs and low lows. And they're getting a bit better at recognizing that, I think, not just the, your employers at work, but in school too. They actually have some lectures based on mental health and lots of resources.
That's
and making
nice.
Sure
That's really nice.
You have a support system and emphasizing that, because there is a lot of burnout. And, interestingly, so veterinarians and dentists have the highest rate of suicide.
Really?
Of any profession. So I think there's a lot of compassion fatigue. So you're trying to care for the animals, because you do, that's what kind of got you in to the profession, usually, is you like working with animals, you care about them, and trying to keep the people happy too. So
like there's both sides of that, you know, you're treating the animal, but you're also kind of emotionally supporting the owner.
Parents, right? Yes. And I think there's a lot of mix up too with, because we don't pay for healthcare in Canada, people don't know how much things cost in general. So there's always kind of that, assumption that vets are rich, or you're just after our money because everything is so expensive, and it's gotten more expensive the last few years too, as everything has. So that makes it that much harder too, when you're doing your best to give discounts or help people out, and which we do as much as we can. It's hard not being an owner. There's only so much I can have a say in, in how much to charge people, but and not everyone does, but some people will turn around and just, there's a lot of ungratefulness and accusations, like, oh, if you really cared about my animal, you'd do this for free, or you'd give this to me, and you must not really love animals if you won't do this.
And you're like, oh my gosh, I'm in this profession because I love animals.
So there's some guilt with that, but it's kind of frustrating too, because you wouldn't expect that to go into any other business and leave without paying, or say, oh, I'll get my groceries, I'll pay for them next month when I get the money or something.
And that's such an interesting thought. It's like, especially in Canada, that we just don't have like the knowledge, or people are just naive to the fact of like what medication actually costs.
Or how much an x-ray costs. It's surprisingly expensive.
Yeah. So.
Like yep. even when you have to buy your crutches or something, like, yeah. oh, these yeah. crutches are $150. And you're like, what are you talking about? Yeah. It's so expensive. Yeah. Like, can you just imagine?
Stuff that's not covered.
yeah. Anything that's not covered but is expensive.
It's heartbreaking too when, you know, we've done all we can, or I'd love to do more for free. I'd love to do, discounted services. Mm-hmm. And even if we do, sometimes people just can't afford that, or right. it's the finances that have to decide where they draw the line and how far they treat an animal. And a lot yeah. of euthanasias are based on finances too. So that's, yeah. that can be hard as well. If you see how attached they are and they just yeah. can't afford it. But yeah. I'm a practical person too. I wouldn't spend thousands on a pet dog. And
yeah.
No. We have a son now. So your family always takes,
yes. yeah.
takes first priority, but
absolutely.
Yeah, it's hard to see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then would you say like what would keep you motivated or keep going back to it, or like not finding something else? Like, is it fulfilling right. in the same sense, or?
Yeah, there is definitely, you have to enjoy what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And I do enjoy mm-hmm. the hands-on aspect, and I like surgery, as I said, and I like, being able to see that reward of when you've researched something or tried to find a diagnosis and you found it and you have helped someone or helped a family yeah. with their pet that they love. And you just, yeah, you see how much you are making a difference for some people. And it's kind of the human animal bond too, that, right. companionship is what you're supporting too. It's not all just the medicine. It's yeah, just making people feel reassured about, the care of their animal, or offering yeah. them some hope, and just seeing how much that animal means in their life
yeah.
for the companion animal side mm-hmm. of things, and
yeah.
for farmers too, it's their livelihood. So to yeah. be able to help them with that is yeah. And it's
rewarding.
It is yeah. rewarding too when you've remember that one detail that you learned 3 years ago yeah. in school or something, and it's, oh, it has come in handy. And
you're like, oh my goodness, I remember it did pay off.
Reading this on yeah. page 376 of the textbook and
in the little corner when yeah. it said make note.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is kind of exciting to problem solve something.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's been cool to see both, because we've always had family dogs and stuff like that, and Lauren had a couple of dogs, and so we see the vet clinic when we go in as like a pet owner. Mm-hmm. It's something our pet, and then as the farm, it just is like, it's interesting to see both sides, and because like just the pet versus the livestock, like like you guys have to navigate that line of like, okay, well, I just was dealing with somebody's livelihood, and now I have to go into the clinic and use somebody's livelihood to fix their pet. And like, it just seems like
yeah.
you have to walk that line.
Yeah, it's so, definitely wearing two hats. Yeah. It can be hard to switch your brain on and off to be fully immersed in this, and then have to switch gears and do a puppy vaccine appointment or something.
Yeah. Or a facelift on a...
yeah.
yeah. It just makes me like, being on the farm has made me appreciate the profession so much more, because when you only see one side of it, it's just...
Right.
Yeah, it made me appreciate that. It's just so much more, because it's like... You know, you never, like, it's with everything. You never know what people are going through. Like, if I go in with Goose and, you know, I'm like, okay, you just need to get his puppy vaccine. Like, the veterinarian could have been dealing with a euthanasia in the back. He could have been dealing on a farm. Like, you just have no idea.
Right.
And, like, with everything, you just need to be kind and, like...
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. And I do need to remind myself of that too, that this is someone's first experience here in the clinic, and and it might seem like maybe only 15 minutes to me, but how I act and if I'm rushing things, or if I really take the time and explain things to them, that's the only 15 minutes of my day that they see. Right. So it's, and that's their impression of everything, and that's their experience with veterinary medicine. So yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's really, no, I was gonna kind of maybe finish off. Do you have like we kind of talked about the facelift of the dog, but do you have kind of one last fun, cool, epic story that you want to share before we finish? I don't know. I kind of want to end off.
It could be meaningful too.
It could be meaningful. Yeah. Yeah. It could be like the best thing you've ever done for an animal, or like
so many funny stories. I wish I wrote down like a James Herriot book, especially some of the calls that you get on call can be pretty funny too.
You're like, my hamster is stuck in the dryer.
I don't know. Yeah. It can be entertaining on call to listen to them. I mentioned the wild turkey at the wildlife, or not wildlife,
the alpaca thing.
Yeah, the sanctuary. So they have they rescue dogs, but they also have farm animals and all kinds of things there. So they had this resident wild Tom that had just flown in and decided he lived there. And it was a wild turkey. It wasn't the domestic white ones. So I came one day for a different reason. And the turkey was actually flirting with me, and it was ruffling its feathers, and its wattles turned all blue, and it was kind of strutting around and trying to protect me from the rescue owner. And he was actually flying at him and attacking him to try and keep him away from me. And he followed me all the way back to the truck and wasn't even going to let me in. He was
make sure you got in safely.
He was quite a flirt.
A gentleman.
So that was pretty funny.
Wild turkeys are funny. Like, we have a lot around here. And when we do turkeys, we keep them outside, like domestic turkeys. And so they'll call all the wild turkeys in for us. It's just like, it's technically illegal to use a live animal to call in a wild animal. But like, I mean, they just do it. They're just chilling out there. Them. Yeah.
The ditch chickens.
We've never, just for the record, we've never killed a wild turkey from our domestic turkeys calling. It's never happened, but we could.
Disclosure.
I like that. That was a good way to end off. Well, Rebecca, we just wanted to thank you so much for taking the time to come chat with us and teach us. And
thanks for having me.
I know some things now about
what
it's like to be a veterinarian. Anyways, is there anything you kind of want to say before we close off? Like, do you have one last kind of...
Well, thanks for inviting me and coming up with all the topics. It was fun, and there's so much more that we could have gotten into, and time just flies by.
That's always how it goes.
Yeah.
We always leave all our guests just like, I wish I had so much more to say. We're just like, well, yeah.
Come for a part two.
Yeah.
Yep. That's awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much, Rebecca. We really appreciated having you.
Yeah, yes. We'll talk to you guys next time.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Bye.